only thing better than watching TV is taking it personally.
You guys, it's Taking It Personally. I'm so excited for this variety pack episode because we have quite literally three shows, maybe some others too. Maybe we'll do a whole like, what are you watching? What are you not? I mean, I don't know. I'm just throwing some
like, what am I watching?
So welcome back to Tip, Director of Social for Entertainment at Betches Media, host of Mention It All, and creator of Bravo by Betches, Dylan Hafer. SBBD.
Bonsoir.
Oh my God, I didn't even talk about that.
Oh yeah.
So I have a trip coming up.
A trip coming up.
To Paris. I'm going to fly overnight to Paris.
Ah oui.
During, unfortunately, the timing unknown to me at the point in which I finalized my plans is during Paris Fashion Week, which is, I don't even know how much of a problem that's going to be for me. I think it's going to be a little bit of an issue, maybe. Some of these reservations are going to be a little tough.
Maybe.
I did get a reservation at one of the hardest places in Paris to get a reservation at. And there's one other place I want to go to, but it's just not going to happen because there's like 20 something tables and it was one of the best in the world.
Vanderpump Villa?
Obviously. Vanderpump Paris. Bonjour. Can I have a terrible glass of rosé for 75 euro? Yeah, so I'm going to Paris, then Rome, meeting up with a friend in Rome, and then Paris again. And then I am doing a day trip to Amsterdam because I was going to go to the vineyards and go to the cellars and Rome, which is not how you pronounce it, but welcome. Je parle français un peu. But a bunch of them are closed. And I started thinking to myself, like, while you're there, what do you want to do? Like, genuinely, what do you want to do that you've maybe not thought of that was realistic to do? So one of these days, I'm taking a Eurostar to Amsterdam and I got a ticket to Anne Frank's house. And I just felt like genuinely a connection. Like, as a Jewish person, I was like, I got to fucking see that goddamn house. I got to see it. And the Anne Frank is like for anyone, let alone a Jewish person, let alone a Jewish girl reading the Diary of Anne Frank. I'm going to reread it before I go. So if the door buzzes, there's a journal that's being dropped off. The Diary of Anne Frank has made an enormous impact in my life. And even the idea of being that close to that point in history and just everything going on with like, you know, Jews and stuff, it's just, it's very meaningful. So I'm taking a 3.5 hour train in a day. I'm doing it there and back. And I'm going to go to her house and I'm sure like sob. And then I think I'm just going to go for a walk because I've never been to Amsterdam. So I'm going to like do a little stroll and then come back to Paris for a couple more days.
Are you going to go or try to go to the restaurant where the Amsterdam dinner happened?
Okay, so I started thinking about that.
Because don't hate me, but when you said there's like one place I have to go in Amsterdam, I was like, where the door Kyle
because
ran out of?
Fucking husband, don't speak about it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I
need a piece of bread. Maybe you'll calm down.
Right. Yeah. But the problem with that is that dinner looked really fucking expensive.
Okay.
So, because I'm only going to be there. So I get to Amsterdam around like 12 something. The house is like, I do a sort of introduction and then a tour. I'd probably be there for an hour and a half. And I think my train back is at like 6 something or 7. So I don't know if I have a lot of time. And if I have to choose between like, going to post something on social that I probably will forget to do and then remember 6.5 years later versus like just walking through.
You know what you should do? You should look up and find like a really good bakery or like place like a
and get a piece of bread.
Something like that you can do like quickly, like not like a really fancy meal or something, but like just find like a great spot that you can like go if you have a couple hours.
Oh, I thought you meant so I could throw a piece of bread or something.
No. I mean, if you're going to walk around and like have a couple hours to kill, just like find a spot that's like highly recommended and just try it.
There is one restaurant that I was looking at that sounds like very veggie forward that I might do, but I also think I'm going to bring some snackies with me from Paris. I mean, I'll make do with a croissant and like just live my best life. So I'm very excited about it. I am bringing my equipment with me and I do think I need to learn what a VPN is, which I have AGs know well. I have fought vociferously against the idea of ever understanding a VPN. I really reject technology in every form. It like upsets me. And I think unfortunately, in order to record episodes to go up in a timely manner or yonder, I'm going to have to get a fucking VPN so that I can say I'm back here in New York while I am en Paris.
Yeah, I don't think Peacock is going to work so good.
I don't think it's going to work so good.
I actually, I used a VPN in Paris in 2016 to watch the Olympics.
How'd that go?
It was fine. It works. It's just, you use a VPN and then you can do it.
And what is it? See, I don't literally know.
No, it's like, it's not hard. You just have to like choose one. Like,
and then what does it do?
You like,
you can, if you guys could only see the disgust on my face, what like, then what does it do?
You like turn it on. You like press go.
Is it, wait, is it a physical thing?
No.
It's an app, right?
Yeah, but like you press the button.
I'm not going to be able
to. And then you're using the internet as if you're in the Clawfish. And it's.
So it's like Safari, but it's a VPN? Or
I think so, yeah. It's kind of like a plugin that you would add to like Chrome or whatever.
I do know that there's one because I did Google.
There are like many different options.
There is one that has a 30-day free trial. That's
yes,
the only reason I'm considering it. And time is my friend because maybe I could like scroll around with it now to figure out if I'm gonna even understand it. My capacity for learning is very low.
I promise you, like, once you pick one and like start using it, it's like literally just like using the internet.
You know what, honestly, this would enable me to see some show. Oh no, wait, no, can I change my location or does it always have to be East Coast? Like, if I have
I think you can.
Okay, because I could catch up on some BBC stuff that I can't get on BritBox. Like, that would actually work. That's what people do.
You could be
VPN.
Using a VPN all the time, Sarah.
Well, that's what our pal Kiki Monique does, because she frequently talks about using a VPN. Yeah. So she can watch East Coast time.
Oh.
She lives in LA, which is really smart. But have I ever asked her what a VPN is? I don't, because
one of my coworkers uses a VPN to watch Love Island UK, like before the episodes get put on Hulu.
God, such a commitment. Jesus. Yeah. I did that for like a season or a couple but in my own time, years after the fact, but I can't, and I can't Big Brother. It's just too much. It's too much. Too much.
You're like, you're going to be like, so can I VPN into the future and watch Traitors before it comes out?
Well, that's the other thing is that like, I think, I don't even know what the episodes, this will be very exciting for people. Like, I still haven't figured out exactly what the episodes are going to be. If I'm going to be Zooming with people from, I'm going to kind of.
Maybe just do like a little like
I
solo.
I think it's going to be solo. Yeah.
I'm like, I'm going to be like waking up at 7 a.m. to Zoom with you from Paris.
I did once take a work call while walking up the Eiffel Tower, which I really strongly don't recommend. Although,
like, babe, are you really out of breath right now?
Yeah, 100%. Although I think I'm going to do that again because I have a perilous fear of heights. It would be the third time I've done it. And the stories when I IG storied while walking up the Eiffel Tower, like out of breath, freaking out, our aunt saved on highlights on my Instagram. I think I'm going to do it again because it's so scary. But it's good to sort of not triumph because I'm I have a perilous fear of heights that will never change, but I kind of want to do it again. I kind of want to put myself through that.
Do you just walk up to the midpoint?
So, but at the midpoint, still like 1400 steps or something.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
still,
yeah.
Yeah, but you can only go to the second level, which sounds like, oh, you're only going to the floor, but it's like the Eiffel fucking Tower. Well, and then you have to take an elevator to the top.
Right, because like the top half is like literally vertical up and down.
Right. And so the second time I did it, I took the elevator to the top, even though I absolutely didn't want to go to the top because I was like, well, if you're about to die here, you might as well be on top of the Eiffel Tower because it's so fucking high. And and then I stood back. I didn't even go to the edge. Yeah. I stood back.
You know what's cool? If you want to do something similar but different, you can walk upstairs to the top of the Arc de Triomphe and it's a cool view.
Oh, so I don't really fuck with the Arc de Triomphe an awful lot. I don't know why. There are certain things where I'm like, like, I don't know that I'm going to go back to the Louvre because that's not really my energy. My energy is Musée d'Orsay and lingerie. And I also have a ticket to the Dior thing, which is supposed to be great. But I haven't made any. I finally just made a couple reservations in Rome because you just can't fuck around.
Yeah.
But and I got some good restaurants thanks to AG recommendations, but Paris, I haven't done a single goddamn thing except for one place. One place,
Lingerie, is like my favorite museum in Paris.
Same.
Yeah,
it's the wall to wall circular,
the water lilies, the Monet, and with like the curved.
Yep, yeah. I cry every time because I think of my grandmother, and then I'm like, oh, I have Grandma Jean with me when I go. Yeah, so it's gonna be. I am in disbelief that I'm going, honestly, because it's so last minute, and I just really wasn't figuring out math when I made the travel plans, and I did not remember how long I had stayed in Paris previously, and it's just a longer trip than I've ever done in Europe. Usually I do like maybe, I don't even remember, like maybe 8 days, and this is like 12.
Oh.
So yeah, I have
chic.
Joined the Patreon because I really wasn't thinking about anything when I booked this, and now it's become a thing.
Well, maybe you can tack on a couple days to Scotland and go run around in some muck and some leaves.
We need to discuss what is happening, but can we please start with the end of the episode when Phaedra looks at Parvati, which I still cannot say correctly, and says, what does she say? Like, you need to be more lovable.
You need to be more lovable. You can't keep acting like an ice queen. And she's like, what? So I should be nicer? She's like, yeah.
And then Parvati looks at her and she's like, has this look of like disdain and passive aggression where she's like, mm-hmm. And they just look at each other. And I thought to myself, this is what we deserve.
The layers between Parvati and Phaedra this season are so fascinating.
Magnificent, honestly.
Because in theory, they've been on the same team since night one when they recruited Parvati or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But like, the tension between them and the sort of divergences in both strategy but also in their position within the house. I saw there have been like Twitter for the traitors is like the most entertaining it's been years.
Shit.
But like, no, but just like because people love it so much.
No, I wish I could see it, but I'm not on it.
But like how Phaedra is like everybody's favorite in the house and everybody just like thinks Phaedra is so fun and like whatever, just like loves her. Meanwhile, Parvati is like, everybody thinks she's a traitor. She's like
poor
public
Parvati.
Enemy number one. And like her only hope for like not getting voted out is that she might be able to get people to think that Peter is like trying too hard. And it's like,
but is she maybe gonna win? Like, is this one of those situations where she's gonna be at least able to stretch this out in a way that's genuinely surprising?
I think that it's going to be really, I'm so curious to see what happens next week, because the twist this week, and this is like full spoilers for episode,
oh my God,
whatever.
Full, you should know.
But the twist of them deciding not to have a banishment ceremony on this episode and instead to take everyone down to the river,
light them on fire
around this
light their
fire
asses up.
And instead of a banishment, for them to do this like chain reaction choice of five, or I guess like seven total, only five people being not safe, being mm-hmm. up for murdering, it's like it kind of turned things on its head, because it seemed like we were barreling toward this banishment ceremony where either Peter or Parvati were going to go. And then that would kind of like sort of set the stage for maybe like the last phase of this game. You know, Sandra has her pool balls to explain kind of the math.
I love that.
The math of what we're here. Did you see Sandra's Instagram explanation?
No, I don't let know me, that I follow her.
Let me read to you, because
please.
People were kind of, I think obviously people thought it was like very fun and campy that she's like showing people on the table with the pool balls, like her strategy.
Oh, I thought it was smart. I thought it was smart.
But she really went in and explained more like what her thought process was of the strategy. And I think it's smarter than a lot of people realize.
I haven't, this is news
to
me.
So she said, I want to make something clear.
Oh my God.
During that strategy session, I also made it clear that hopefully the traitors were in our group so that they could murder each and every one of the so-called most faithful of the faithful, therefore allowing the faithful in the leftovers to get to the end of the game. So basically she, and then she says, self-preservation and end-game strategy, what a lot of people don't seem to understand is faithful also have to go, just like the traitors. We can't all get to the end. No one there is oblivious to the fact that Parvati and Phaedra have already been called out several times. That's actually manageable if new traitors... Okay, so...
No, keep going. Say what she said.
She said, that's actually manageable. If new traders enter the mix, then we have to start back from zero. So basically what she's saying, so like watching it the first time, I'm like, wait, so she wants to get rid of the other five of them and she doesn't know that the two traders are actually
in
her
group.
That's
what I thought, I think.
So what she is saying is more or less she already suspects or knows that Phaedra and Parvati are the traders, but that her strategy is to get them on her side so they won't murder her, while then they work to get rid of the other five of the other, you know, Pilot Pete's group, so that at the end of the game, only so many people are going to make it to the end. And so she's saying, I'm working with this alliance and bringing the traitors to my side so they won't murder me. And we're going to work together to get all of those people out. So then I'm going to get to the final five or six. I'm already going to know who the traitors are. And then I can banish the traitors. And then I'm going to win.
Okay, because I was wondering when she was going to come out. Because I was like, yeah, we haven't seen Survivor two-time winner. And she's a big fucking deal. So, and so now I'm glad she's here. I'm glad she's arrived.
She's basically...
she was always here.
She's explaining that, like, I know people are asking this question. And yes, I thought of it too. And that's what she's doing. Because the thing is, if Pilot Pete and his homies, there's five of them. There's no traitors in that group. The game, the five of them can't be the final five. Because if they get out a traitor, if they vote out Parvati, then Phaedra gets to recruit another person. And then that's what Sandra's saying, is that if the recruitment keeps happening as they get out these traitors, then you have to figure out who the new traitor is. Where she's saying, I already know who the traitors are. Why would I want to get rid of them earlier than I have to, and then have to figure out who a new traitor is?
That is...
it really is like...
that's Christopher Nolan playing traitors.
It really is like a higher level... I think we didn't see that level of gameplay at all in season one.
No.
And I think we...
I don't think on any other... I've seen other iterations of traitors. And I don't think on that either.
I don't think we've seen it on this season until like this Instagram caption right here.
Wait, but I'm sad we didn't get that for some of us. In when we watched the episode, I didn't get that. I didn't understand it as... as you just explained it. I feel bad. I think we should have understood
She made it sound like maybe that she said it, but that they kind of cut it out.
Yeah, I believe that.
Because she said during that strategy session, I also made it clear that hopefully the traitors were in our group.
Damn, I wish they had shown more of that.
Because that's the thing. I saw somebody kind of, I think there was like a Twitter thread about it, where somebody was kind of explaining essentially what she just said in more words. And they were like, Pilot Pete is playing really hard, but his only objective is to try and vote out traitors.
Right.
And voting out traitors is not actually the same as making it to the end.
Oh my God. I never would have thought of that.
Sandra is kind of, she's thinking of it in a different way. She has that like galaxy brain to it, where she's like,
graduate school.
Where she's like, at the end of the day, of course, we want to get rid of the traitors, but that getting rid of the traitors as soon as possible is not actually the whole point of the game.
That almost freaks me out how smart that is. That really does freak me out, because I've seen traitors before. I would not have the ability to think on that.
And I think the fact that she's not broadcasting that necessarily,
she's so much smarter than
she's
I am.
She's so smart.
She's so smart. Than I am.
And I watched her seasons of Survivor. Like, I was a Survivor watcher for a long time. And I even think, like, I mean, I guess I was a kid when I was watching those seasons, but like, Sandra is not somebody who I was like, she's my queen, most iconic Survivor, whatever. But like, you don't win that game twice on accident.
No, and you don't win it once on accident, unless the person who did a better job is just hated more by the rest of the tribe.
And I think part of that is that she is really good at downplaying how strategic she is.
She did a better job of it than Dan, who...
Absolutely.
Okay, so I went
Dan
back.
Dan shit the bed when the pressure was... He couldn't face the music.
He couldn't, and he couldn't get out of looking like a traitor and using his voice. He just couldn't do it. And people, I've heard people saying like he's one of the greatest of all time on Big Brother, if not maybe the greatest. So I watched some YouTube compilations, which like isn't the same thing as watching 700 episodes.
Yeah.
But I got it, because I was like, oh, he's so funny, like in his little confessional room, whatever that's called. And then when he's with the house guests, he's someone else. And when he did like the funeral for himself, like I understand it, but it didn't blow my mind. But that's because I'm watching a YouTube compilation, and at that point I know who I'm supposed to believe he is. Mm-hmm. But I really do agree. I do think I thought he was a flop on Traitors, and it's like, not that he shouldn't have been there, I just thought he was a flop.
I think that actually, talking about how he couldn't use his voice without making people think he was a traitor, that makes Phaedra's performance this season
so much
100 times more impressive. Mm-hmm. She is like just such perfection on the season. She's so, everything she says is like so entertaining and like an instant catchphrase and her, you know, her facial expressions and everything. Like she just is, she is really putting on a performance. But the fact that she is being so kind of like, you know, devious and stuff in the traitor aspect of it, but also is like everyone's favorite in the house. It's such a tightrope act. And I'm sort of like, the way that she's pulling it off currently, I mean, obviously some people suspect her. It's not like she's like necessarily has no sort of suspicion on her name, but like the fact that I'm enjoying her like weird castle situationship with CT,
castle daddy,
just as much as I'm enjoying her murdering people.
Yeah, I love when she murders.
It's like, it's kind of amazing. I'm like, I want all of it.
And the thing with Phaedra is it's not that she's entertaining as a traitor. She's entertaining as a TV personality, which makes every aspect of her on the show engaging to watch.
And then on the third side of the coin from those two things I just mentioned, at that fire ceremony when Sheree lights her torch. God. And Phaedra, I think, is like genuinely moved by the moment that she says, you know, I've known Sheree over 20 years, and I'm thinking in this moment of the fact that life in all its craziness has brought us to this moment together where we're on this like weird fucking show in Scotland around this campfire with this weird like who knows what's even happening in the game, and Sheree is like choosing to come and like save her. And then it's like then you have to think about the fact that Phaedra is a traitor and Sheree is like so clueless to that fact.
But I don't think Sheree will be like upset if and when she finds out that Phaedra is a traitor, because I think she will understand the game in a way that maybe we haven't seen her.
It's very the moment of Giselle and Karen where Karen's like, are you getting it? And Giselle's like, I'm getting it. And then the confessional, I don't get it. But like even when the earlier in the season when they had that like poison chalice murder assignment and Phaedra was like adamant that it would not be Sheree on her watch, like it, that kind of moment where it's like these women, those two women I think have like this sort of like spiritual bond, maybe more than you would even know from the fact that they were on like one or two seasons of Real Housewives of Atlanta together. Mm-hmm. 10 years ago. Like it really is, I don't know. I
there's a sisterhood.
Yeah.
And there is a housewife sisterhood that I think also crosses franchises. There is something to be said for like the women who are coming from Bravo or the Bravo Lebs who are coming from Bravo, that they will look out for each other. We saw that with Kate Chastain and Phaedra.
Yeah.
And maybe part of that was because she just genuinely didn't agree with Dan's argument. But I think another part of that is like, no, I'm going to protect and defend this person who I know. And mm-hmm. I know in a different way because we speak a different language.
Kate Chastain like could make it to the end of this season. It's kind of random because she came in halfway through. But like, she's kind of just like floating on by right now. Like, I don't think anybody's really concerned about her in a way that I'm like, you can make it two or three more banishments and then, I don't know.
She could. I do have to say, like, and I'm perhaps not great with change, that I did not think, I don't think she was necessary. I don't think that her coming was necessary. And I also thought that the we're gonna light your ass on fire, like that whole fire thing, instead of, I didn't think that was necessary either, because I'm just like, the structure of the show is perfect. But yes, as you said, it does kind of flip the show on its head a little bit. I don't know how much of it is me just like prompting to protect the integrity of the show's structure.
I saw a theory that because obviously they have an episode count that they have to hit, and so they cannot have all the traitors be found out until a certain point.
Couldn't they just introduce new ones?
But the last episode when they recruited somebody.
Yeah, Peter said, no, ma'am.
If you're giving people the option to turn down the recruitment, you run the risk of
them turning it down.
A dwindling number of traitors. So if on this week's episode they had had a normal banishment ceremony, mm-hmm. and if Parvati had been voted out, then Phaedra would be the only traitor and she would have to recruit someone. And if the person she recruited said no, then theoretically the game could end next episode. And so I think I don't know if this, maybe this fire ceremony was always planned. Maybe it was something that was a very like, if X, then Y. Yeah. But like, I think it was kind of like a production twist to like ensure that we don't end up with one traitor until maybe like the penultimate episode.
Here's my number one concern. And I posted, I literally got back from Rhode Island last night and I was like, first and only thing I'm doing before I crash is watching Traitors.
Yes.
And I posted at the beginning because I just felt like the energy, I was just very concerned about Trishelle understanding. I know. And the C2 stuff is a lot, but like, I'm like, sweetie, okay. But
I feel like I've been shot in my chest with a bullet. Like, babe, grow up.
Also, you're on a TV. I mean, it's like, what do you want? You want him to choose you because you're a better friend? That's not, you're not playing the game of friendship. You're playing the game of traitors.
Right.
And he might understand that you're not a traitor and as such is not going to feel the need to defend you, or because he trusts you, he's not going to feel hurt. She went to 100. I was like, sweetie, enough. But she, I'm very concerned because she does seem pretty confident that Phaedra's a traitor. And so I think we might need to kill Trishelle because I'm not ready to let go yet.
I'm hoping that they murdered Trishelle because I think if they murdered Bergie, I think...
No, I don't want him to go.
Well, yeah, but also I think it would be a little too obvious that they murdered like Peter's bestie. And I don't think... I don't... If part... this is like so stupid that we're like breaking it down this much.
No, we need to. This is a science.
I think if Parvati wants people to think that Peter is a traitor, then murdering Bergie would really strain credulity with that theory, because I think people feel like Peter and Bergie are like authentically close enough that if Peter was a traitor, I don't think he would murder his BFF Bergie.
But I don't think that anyone suspects that Peter is a traitor. I think the Bergie of it all, I think of it more as like they might just call Bergie. Like, I don't know that they're going to do it because he's so close with Peter.
But I think that Parvati wants,
she wants him to feel pain.
I think Parvati
needs, I'm into.
I think Parvati feels like she needs people to think that Peter might be a traitor. Because she wants them to banish him.
Yeah, but that's not going to happen.
Well.
I don't think so.
I don't know. Sweet MJ. I just want her to be included in a conversation for once in her life.
MJ, like, she'll get it right once. And then the next 8 to 10 times she gets it wrong. But her walking in and being like, I don't feel like you. No, you don't. You can't tell me to, like, leave and come back. I'm going to stay in this room or whatever. I just really appreciate that about her. She's like.
Well. I mean, that to me was the biggest misstep that Peter and his crew have made, because it's like this whole game, it seems like
they're high on their own supply.
It seems like a sort of central thing that you really can't be or shouldn't want to be seen in any sort of solid group. And so to be 5 people in the room with a door closed and to have multiple people go in there and literally tell them to leave and close the door behind them. It just is like, who do you think you are? But also, like, like MJ's little, like, tiptoe in her stilettos.
Like, holding onto her jeans, whatever.
The jeans, like, what the jeans doing? And the, like, mesh tattoo top. Like, MJ. And then also later in the fire ceremony when she was, like, so confident that Sandra was going to choose her. And then acting devastated when she didn't. I'm like, unless we've missed something major in the edit, I'm like, are y'all close like that? Like...
In the words of Meredith Marks, when it comes to that week and a half before my period, I wish I was disengaging. My PMS is off the charts. Truly Uber Eats needs to check in and say, it's about that time, isn't it? I know it is. The cravings are crazy. I want to crawl out of my skin. Now it's easier to manage PMS with Estro Control. Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony and Estro Control, is dedicated to making women's lives easier. And that means using only science-backed ingredients that have been proven to work for women. They make no compromise when it comes to quality, and it shows. For AGs who are friends of perimenopause, menopause, or postmenopause, Happy Mammoth has Hormone Harmony. It's not just a supplement for women going through those stages. It's also become a phenomenon. Women can't stop talking about it on social media. A bottle of Hormone Harmony is sold every 24 seconds. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code AndysGirls at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code AndysGirls for 15% off today. I'm engaging. With Mother's Day around the corner, are you thinking about a truly special gift for your mom or a maternal figure in your life? Let me tell you about mylifeinabook.com. It's a unique service that turns your mom's life stories into a beautiful book. Pretty cool, right? Here's how it works. Every week, mylifeinabook.com will send her a question via email. These can be pre-written questions about her life or any custom questions you want to ask. Then she can either type up her response or record her voice. And mylifeinabook.com compiles all of her responses into a beautiful keepsake book. And guess what? They can even create an audiobook using her voice recordings. It's like preserving her voice and her stories for eternity. This book becomes a legacy, something you and future generations can treasure forever. Your mom's given you a lifetime of stories. This is your chance to give her a way to share them. I want to know about the stories of how my mom and dad grew up. What's the first thing they remember after they were born? That's one of the questions I sent to my dad after signing up for My Life in a Book. And I can't think of a greater gift to give my dad in sharing his stories and to receive. It's super easy to use. My favorite part of it, as someone who sometimes lives on turtle time and forgets about sending or receiving email, is that they reach out a couple days prior to sending questions. Just so I know of what questions they're going to send to my dad, if I want to change it for another question or customize it with something that I want to know. It's that kind of specificity and care that I love so much. This is genuinely an incredible, incredible gift. There's no greater present than I could give a family member or a loved one than to participate in this kind of meaningful appreciation for the entirety of their lives, separate from my own. Check out mylifeinabook.com and use code AndysGirls at checkout for 10% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom or loved one this Mother's Day. That's mylifeinabook.com. with code AndysGirls for 10% off today. And thank the Jills Aaron and your life and mine. Conversations around wellness and weight loss can be complicated. There's the Instagram filter we all see on IG and social media, and then IRL. And between $20 smoothies and daily ice baths, everyone is doing the most to hack the health system. But there's a better way. Row. Row provides access to the most popular weight loss shots on the market. Over 200,000 people have already chosen Row to help them lose weight. And you can sign up from the comfort of your own home. No scheduling a doctor's appointment, commute to the doctor's office, and no waiting rooms. The Row Body Program pairs a weekly shot with healthy lifestyle changes so you can lose 15 to 20% of your weight in a year on average and actually keep it off. Of course, medication must be paired with diet and exercise modifications in order to achieve any stated results. Medication cost is not included in the program. Patients must pay for medication separately. With Row, average weight loss is 15 to 20% in 1 year with healthy lifestyle changes. BMI and other eligibility criteria apply. Go to row.co/AndysGirls. You can sign up today and you'll pay just $99 for your first month and $145 a month after that. Medication costs are separate. That's ro.co/AndysGirls. Sign up today.
I was enjoying MJ a lot this episode. I think it was kind of like the most material that we've gotten from her yet. And I don't know. I think MJ is another person who is a great TV personality when she, you know, is given the room to let it show.
You know who else is flopping hard? Fucking Kevin. I can't take it. Every episode he gets more and more obnoxious. He's genuinely obnoxious.
I think because of his proximity to this like faithful of the faithful group, mm-hmm. he feels like he's in this position of power. And I'm like, first of all, you're like an idiot. And second, I think he is really condescending.
He's very condescending.
And that he, like, when he's like, yeah, MJ, thanks, MJ, just give us a minute. It's like, who are you? Even at least Pilot Pete is like running this group. You're just like Tweedledum number four.
He is one of those guys who I think just, well, we saw this on Bling Empire. He sidles up to people in positions of like power in Anna, wealth. And he just, well, in that, at that time he was playing adorable. He was like, I'm just dumb and poor. And
right. He was my friend. He was like the broke guy who actually had to work on Bling Empire. Yeah. And here it's like, okay, what now?
Yeah. It's a
pick a struggle.
He attaches himself to people that might help him and who wouldn't, honestly, to a certain extent, but like his ability to then assume he is in the same position or to to play some sort of like personality game is not, it was potentially some relatively successful on Bling Empire, but on this I'm like, no, you're out of your depth.
Yeah, like Bling Empire, you didn't have to like win a challenge.
No,
you just had to like
say I'm poor. Oh my god, isn't that funny? Like, that's truly what he did.
You just had to like be able to bear Christine Chu.
Can you imagine Christine Chu on Traitors?
She'd be like, I'm not getting in the muck.
Oh my god, can you imagine if she like fell into that swamp,
if she was in that leaf net trap?
It was giving me like Princess Bride energy. First off, I would have been really poor. Actually, honestly, I felt bad for Peter at the end because he was shaking and shivering. He was so cold.
The fact that Peter and Bergie were the only two that fell in the mud.
But also that fucking net was scary.
Yes, it was pretty aggressive.
I was like, that's too successful. I mean, watch it over and over again.
See Sheree, help.
And Phaedra, I think, was like, I can leave now, please. Like, get me out of here. Like, it's enough. Like, we've had you got your little moment cut. Like,
I talked to Phaedra a few weeks ago, and she was like super last minute cast on this season, which is crazy because it's like, what would it have looked like without her?
Oh, they needed her.
But she was saying that she like didn't really know what she was signing up for in terms of the physical challenges. And I'm like, yeah, I would. Doesn't surprise me.
Neither did Kate. And I honestly understand that. Like, you're going to show up, you have your outfits and call it a day. And this was not that. So I wonder, did she explain why it was so last minute? Somebody fall out?
I don't know for this season specifically. Okay. I would guess, yes, that somebody probably had to pull out. I don't know who. She said that she was in talks to do season one.
Oh.
And the scheduling didn't work out. So she must have, I mean, I'm sure, obviously she was on some list or some, you know, whatever. But yeah, so this season, I think she said that she got a call on a Thursday to be in Scotland on a Monday.
No.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
And she had to do, she was saying that because it's a competition show where there's like physical stuff, she had to do like certain health screenings. Like, you have to, you know, you have to do like an EKG and like,
yeah,
to make sure you're not going to like, you know, die on the obstacle course.
Yeah.
She also mentioned this I thought was really funny. They have to like get their outfits approved.
Yeah.
Like, they have to like send pictures of what clothes they're bringing, basically.
Wow. That's weird.
Because, I mean, if you look at what they're wearing, it looks like somebody gave them instructions.
Yeah, that's true. Some of them are more styled than others, I have to say.
Also, I watching the episodes, I really think that Phaedra might be the only person who brought glam.
I keep wondering that, like, is she doing her own makeup? Because if she is, she has such a gift.
Certainly not.
You don't think so?
She's showing up to breakfast with like a full professional looking beat.
Also, how would you coordinate that? Because they don't stay in the castle, right? They have like a hotel somewhere.
I think so, yeah. Also, she
would need to get approval on that.
I don't know if the cast stays in the castle.
No, I don't think that they do.
Yeah. So she's doing so much with her hair. Like, there are clearly like multiple like
looks.
Yeah. Like, I just think like,
God, I
don't think
that,
so
much.
You know, I've met Phaedra once and she had people with her, and I don't think that she, I don't think that's how she rolls.
Oh my God. I love that energy. She would be a tough person to bring back though, because at that point, whatever new cast of like Traitors 3 would know that she's a superstar.
Like,
so
next
that
season.
Would be, yeah. That would be, yeah. I don't want them to get into this. I don't want us to feel like we're like kind of scrapping around doing these like crazy things when we don't really need to do that. I don't want us to be in a position where we're constantly resetting.
No, I agree. And I think, like, I get why they thought that bringing Kate back would be mm-hmm. kind of like a fun stunt this season. But I think it speaks to the quality of the casting that they would have been fine without her. Mm-hmm. And I hope that in, you know, for future seasons, I'm assuming they'll, you know, put a lot of effort into keeping the casting level high, and that it's like, you don't really need to be like bringing in like a ringer halfway through.
Do you think that Peter should have said yes to being a traitor?
I mean, like, in the sense that, like, yes, because I think that he's kind of like simple. Like, the whole thing of like, I want to win the right way. It's like, what are you talking about?
Well, he's a bachelor. He's used to like being Captain America.
But it's the same energy as some of the like
real people
from season one. Yeah. Where they're like, my feelings were hurt because Ceri lied to me. And it's like, you're on a game called The Traitors. And so I think Pete is coming at it from that, where he's like, no, man, like, I would be so mad. I would be so sad if I won, but it wasn't with like my crew. And it's like, okay, so you're like, maybe not going to win, but if you do, you'll have to split the money more ways. Like, just from a pure like performance level mindset, being a traitor is like a better proposition, especially if you've already convinced so many people that you're not one.
But I think it also depends on what the value is of going on this show. Like, for some people, the value is, you know, additional celebrity and attention, and also that money on top of the money that they're already being paid. For Peter, he might see value in something else. He might see value and yeah. maybe attach to that some sort of financial something in terms of like being seen as the guy who's going to do right. Like, there is a benefit to that potentially.
Yeah, I have seen some discussion of the money aspect, that for certain people on this cast, like, you know, if Tamara's getting paid $100,000 an episode for Real Housewives of Orange County, then the opportunity to like perhaps split a prize pot that could perhaps be as much as $250,000 before taxes, like, it's not really there for the money. But like, last season that kind of became a thing when Ceri like was viewed as like kind of screwing people over out just of their money,
and insane. They're
like, but I said that I needed the money, and it's like, babe, like, that's not really what this is about. Like, it's not, I think any kind of reality show like this that has a cash prize attached to it, it's like, you can't, it's not a good idea to really get attached to the money for like life reasons, because any game like this, if there are like 15, 16, 20 people cast on the show, it's like, you're probably not going to win.
So I did.
It's not somebody else's fault that you like wanted to pay off your student loans.
Totally. And I did, I think it was 2 days on Deal or No Deal, where I was essentially, I want to say I was essentially a production assistant, but it was in Rhode Island. They came to Rhode Island to do casting, and I was a part of the production team and helped, like, you know, for all the people that showing up were deciding, go here, go here, go here, right. go here. And it was tough because a lot of people came into the door with a genuine story of like, I have no, this terrible thing happened, family member, medical stuff, bills, divorce, loss, death, all of that. But that's not that, that's, this is not that kind of show. This is right. kind it's of like, it's a different kind of energy. So people come in thinking that that kind of story is going to get them one step further. I'm like, no, that's the reason that you're not going to be in the game.
Yeah. I kind of love that this season, like other than like cheering for money being added to the prize pot in the challenges, like the money isn't really talked about this season, because like on most celebrity reality shows, they're not competing for a cash prize. They're like, you know, competing for Instagram followers and
also who doesn't want to win. And if you're like putting yourself into this immersive experience, which reality TV stars know how to do really well, if you're successful, you're going to get caught up in it. So it is going to be like, this is a cutthroat game. There is something to be said for the fact that like Tamara, other people, Dan even was like, this is the hardest thing that I've had to do. Like,
that is
a very real situation and circumstance for people who are really well versed in reality TV, and in most cases in doing it really well. And so if they're saying this is the hardest thing, then, you know, you gotta believe them.
Yeah, I remember Ceri, she's done Survivor, I don't know, 3 or 4 times.
I think 4.
She won Traitors, obviously. Yeah. And then last year she did Big Brother, like normal person Big Brother with her son. And she has had nothing but negative things to say about her experience with Big Brother, just because she was like, she was in that you're in that house for like 90 days.
Could never be me.
24 hours a
could
day.
Could never be
stuck
me.
With these like rando losers.
With cameras on you? Absolutely
and
not.
And the social...
Let me fart in my own time
the
in my
social
private house.
Game on Big Brother, it's so like slow and like subtle.
No.
That Sari was like pretty openly miserable by the end
of it.
And
you don't have TV,
it.
You don't have internet.
Right. And whereas like Traitors, they're literally there for like maybe 2 weeks tops.
I think it's like 3 weeks.
Survivor, yeah. It's like a month, give or take. And it's like, yeah, like these people that are kind of iconic in this field having these, I think it's really interesting actually to hear people kind of like have these takes on like the different experiences of doing these different shows, because like, you know, Sari might not want to go back to Survivor for like a fifth time, but she like will not do Big Brother again. And like, I don't know, I kind of think it's like fascinating.
I would love to see Sari, but I mean, not to say that I'm taking back everything I said, but that's in terms of having someone come in halfway through. If you want to have, well, no, I guess you could, this would be the hardest thing to do, but if anyone is up for a challenge at Sari, to have someone start at the beginning, like when you meet all of the contestants day one for season three, I would not be upset if Sari was there. I would be curious to see how that would work, but that's also because I don't deal well with letting go. And I was really annoyed and frustrated at the fact that the normal people would not let her win, because she has every right to relish in that and be celebrated for it. And for them to make her feel bad, like she has to fucking apologize because you guys are, you forgot you're on a reality TV show where the point of the show is to manipulate each other, and to make her feel bad for being great. Like, for people who understand Sari, even if you don't understand Sari's journey, but she has deserved to win for a while, so it's like for her to win at Traitors I think is a big deal. And I felt like they took it away from her, and I was just like, shut the fuck up, like enough. Like, I knew they were really upset, but like do that for 10 minutes and then be like, damn, like let's grab a cocktail or a spritz or like whatever and cheers to you kicking our asses. I know that's easy for me to say because then you're caught up in it, but then at a certain point when you're filming the reunion, or did we watch a reunion? I feel like we watched a reunion, and it's just like I feel like we watched it. Did that really happen?
Sari is the people's princess.
She is the people's princess, and we deserve to see her be celebrated in that way. And I really do feel like they took it away from her.
They filmed the reunion this week for season two.
And how do we think that went?
I don't know. I'm like, I don't know if there's going to be that much like.
Isn't Andy hosting it?
I don't know. Did he host the season one reunion?
I can't remember.
The exact energy match that you and I just had for that, where it's like, I don't fucking know.
I don't know. I want Alan to do everything ever, including getting an Emmy for this. I really actually genuinely think he deserves one.
Yeah.
Genuinely for best host reality competition.
I think that RuPaul is great. And
it's enough.
I think that RuPaul has enough Emmys.
I think that RuPaul
also
has enough
Emmys. I would love for... If RuPaul is going to stop winning Emmys, it would be really cool for another queer man to win that award, who is also wearing like flamboyant, crazy outfits on TV and giving like a performance.
Yes.
Like, it's not like he would be giving it back to like, I don't know.
Jeff Probst.
Ooh, I love.
We love.
Who we love. No, but like.
Wait, no, but cheers to Jeff Probst is like.
But Alan Cumming is another person who in a lot of ways is like genuinely transgressive and like has done really cool things. And I think what he's doing on Traitors is like kind of an amazing performance.
It is a performance. Yeah, I totally agree. And
Alan was just on Jimmy Fallon, I think, this week.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, it was fun. I think it was pretty clear Jimmy isn't watching the show, but that's okay.
He's very busy. I think that someone said this on social. It literally may have been you. It may have been Bravo by Betches, but it was like, if and when RuPaul is ready to retire from Drag Race, Alan Cumming.
It was not me, but I wouldn't.
I mean, Alan Cumming is not a drag queen, but I don't know that a host needs to be a drag queen in order to host Drag Race.
Yeah, I don't think so. But I don't know. I haven't watched Drag Race in a long time. So,
I mean, I'm not a drag race person, so I can truly go fuck myself. But I just want Alan. I want to see Alan continue to kill it because I'm obsessed. Also, did you see like half the cast showed up to Club Cumming, where I have done many an AG Live? And
the
by many,
cast?
I mean two. Yeah,
they showed up. Oh, that's fun. That must have been when they were here for the reunion.
Yeah, he posted it. It was like, poverty. I mean, it was just like 10 people. Dan, other people.
I saw like photos from that night. I didn't know that's where they were.
Yeah, which is, can you imagine? Because you know, if you haven't been to Club Coming, it's literally,
it's intimate.
It's teeny, teeny, tiny, which is fabulous. And it's a, this like great, great, great little cabaret space and bar where I've done Andy Scrolls Live twice. And it, I had a ball both times. But like, just I can't imagine being one of the people in the bar who has a Peacock subscription, and you look up and it's literally half the cast
the of Traitors.
And you know they were like turtle timing and having a kiki. Like,
oh,
you
yeah.
Know
no, they were
happening.
Having fun. There were like photos of them. It was like Sandra and Phaedra and Dan. And
was Phaedra there?
Yes. Well, I don't know if she was at Club Coming, but
oh,
she
yeah.
was. She and Sheree were in New York for sure.
I just came back from the salon. And for the record, I went with a sassy little bob and quiet luxury shade of blonde. Yes, that's literally what we're calling it, quiet luxury. Aside from trips to the salon, I don't actually blow out my hair. My hair is naturally wavy, and that's why I love Way. Way's new anti-frizz cream is a lightweight cream that provides immediate frizz control that lasts for up to 72 hours. I know that I have a limited amount of time with wet, wavy hair in which to get myself in order. And that is why I love the anti-frizz cream. It has notes of bergamot, Italian lemon, violet, and more. And it smells unbelievable. Truly, as someone who is a little bit sensitive to scents, I put this in my hair and I feel great. It also genuinely pairs well with my perfume, which I appreciate. I don't blow out my hair because after years of color processing and attempting to make it straight, I know it looks better and stays healthier when I avoid blow drying, which is why I love the anti-frizz cream. I've used products, especially with wavy hair, where it feels heavy and looks kind of wet. And that's why I love Way's anti-frizz cream, because it enhances the natural waves in my hair. I still look like me, just a little elevated. And P.S., I am way obsessed with Way's other bestsellers. Their leave-in conditioner, detox shampoo, my personal favorite. Frizz-free up your schedule with Way. Go to theouai.com and enter promo code Andy for 15% off any product. That's theouai.com with promo code Andy. Okay, so what do we think is going to happen at the end?
Oh, I don't.
Do you want to make that determination? Should we hold off? We can hold off. Someone will win.
I think that Sandra, or not Sandra, I think that Parvati and Phaedra are in maybe like a stickier spot than the Traitors were last season.
Agree.
Because like last season, like Sari didn't really encounter much friction at all making it to the end.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that enough people, obviously Parvati is like, you know, foremost target in the house right now, I think. But like, I think that Phaedra has been maybe more quietly clocked by a few different people.
Yeah. Goddamn,
so,
Trishelle.
Yeah. So we'll see. I think it's going to be exciting. But also, I think that this, like, the way that this show is cast and edited and produced and stuff, like, I'm not worried about it being boring at all.
Yeah.
And I just love that. Like, every episode, when I've sat down to watch, I've had a great time.
Yeah, it's genuinely, it's like must-see TV. Speaking of must-see TV, this was meant to be a variety pack episode, and we were going to talk a little bit about my obsession with Mr. and Mrs. Smith and our obsession or just like interest and enjoyment with expats. We are not going to be able to do that today, but just to say, you're going to come back on tip and we will mention it all. If you haven't watched Mr. and Mrs. Smith, I had a little bit of reticence about it because I really genuinely am obsessed with the movie. And I was a little like put off kilter when Fleabag left.
Phoebe Waller-Bridge.
Phoebe Waller-Bridge was working on the show with
Donald Glover.
It's been a long day.
And was replaced by Maya Erskine.
Yes.
From Pen 15.
Right. Which I couldn't watch. I know people are obsessed with it, but it was too triggering for me for being like a nerd. I couldn't take it.
I've seen some episodes. I think it's great. I never like sat down and
It was too close. It was too cringe in that way that I was like, oh my God. But So I was concerned because of the Phoebe Waller-Bridge of it all. And Donald Glover gave an interview, I think, this past week where he got more into the nitty-gritty of why that partnership didn't work out, because they were going to co-write and co-star. Really, really fascinating. And anyone who knows Donald Glover, I mean, his work is outstanding. So I knew it was going to be a good show, but I was just like, what kind of show is it going to be? Because if Phoebe left, what does that mean for the creative? And it just sounds like they had different visions. Anyway, all this to say, it is a very different show than the movie Mr. and Mrs. Smith, Brad Pitt, Angie fucking, and then, you know, hashtag Team Jen. It is a different sitch than that entirely, but it does have moments of like peak comedy during it. It is also very sexy. And the cinematography and everything is so rich. It looks like an Amazon show. It could have been an Apple show if not. It would not have worked on Netflix. It's too rich for Netflix. It just looks It looks great. I watched it in 0.0 seconds, 8 really strong episodes. I need season 2 immediately. I think you will genuinely enjoy it.
It's definitely on my list. I feel like there's a bunch of things that I'm watching right now that are like limited series, short seasons that are doing weekly
this
drops.
Is not, oh, yeah, yeah. This
but
is
so
not.
But so I'm watching True Detective, Night Country, which there's like 2 more episodes.
Do I need to see that?
It's okay. I'm watching Expats, like we said, there's a couple more episodes. Trying to think, what else am I? There's like something else, but I feel like there's a bunch of stuff that I'm watching right now that's going to be like over in a couple weeks, and then maybe I'll feel more like capable of doing a binge.
I would love to have you back on after. I mean, I'd love to have you back on every episode, but especially after whenever the last episode of Expats airs.
Yes,
which is also an Amazon show. Look at us.
Also an Amazon show, and I believe so. Episode 4 of Expats came out this week that I just watched and I thought was really interesting. I heard someone say, I think episode 5 is like a feature length episode that is mostly about their Nicole Kidman's character's like live-in housekeeper. Because
I am so into that.
So if I remember correctly, and I'm not like reading off of anything right now, I think they premiered that episode at one of the film festivals Sundance in the fall, maybe? Like maybe Toronto.
Okay.
And it was like, so there was like an event for the thing at the film festival, but they, instead of showing like the first episode or whatever, they chose to show this like kind of bottle episode or like, you know, standalone, whatever. And so if that is what I'm, you know, if it is as I, you know, am recalling it described, I'm really, really curious to see, because I think this show was fully written or, you know, adapted for the screen and directed by Lulu Wang, who is the same filmmaker who made The Farewell a few years ago, which I thought was just like an amazing movie. Awkwafina in that movie is like, you know, I wish she would do a million more things like that. But the way that that was described, I feel like that episode could really be like a showpiece for what Lulu Wang can do as like a writer and a director. And I think that, you know, this show, I have like some certain mixed feelings about like the characters and the story and like maybe how much I care or how compelling I find it. But I, you know, that type of thing sounds like it could be like a really exciting sort of like exercise.
Yeah, because I'm very excited to watch that. I agree with you about some of the sort of notes about the show, but I also think just any kind of prestige Nicole Kidman vehicle, especially one where she's upset, angry, shamed, guilty, you know,
grief-stricken,
is that's must-see TV for me.
Oh, yeah, I'm not complaining.
No, and I hear you. I know that you're not, but it is also just one of those shows. It's a tough watch at points. I am going to spoil, so you can stop listening because we're going to end with this, guys, if you haven't like seen it or whatever. But I am going to spoil one quick thing, which is maybe a weird thing to focus on. But when I heard about the show, just really honestly in watching the trailer, because it was a surprise for me, I don't know that I knew the show was like being made in the ways that when other Nicole Kidman vehicles or TV shows are announced, I pay attention. I thought the family was in grief about their young, adorable, cute as a button son being hit by a car and having it something to do with the nanny. I never for a single second thought for a single second, it could include something to do with him being taken. Mm-hmm. And no parent should ever have to suffer the grief or loss of losing a child. But for me as a viewer to now experience this as, oh my God, someone intended to take this kid versus mm-hmm. a terrible, horrifying, tragic accident, it just compounds it in a way. It makes me feel so unwell. There's something about it where I just like, it's so upsetting to me to think about any child in pain, you know, an innocent child, but also just like the fact that someone intended to do, you know what I'm saying? That might seem like an obvious burger to people, but I really just assumed that this was a terrible accident with the kid and that's what it is.
There's a storytelling choice that I thought was super interesting. And I think the first two episodes, which were released together, but obviously if you're watching it later, you know, you can watch at whatever cadence you want.
Yeah.
I would really recommend watching those first two episodes more or less back to back.
Agree.
Because basically what they do is the first episode is a year after, and then the second episode goes back and sort of shows you the sequence of events. And so if you're kind of feeling a little bit like ungrounded mm-hmm. in the events of episode one, that's kind of on purpose.
Yeah.
And episode two kind of,
it'll connect,
gives you that grounding. And then also, you know, like what you were saying, knowing after that it's an unresolved mm-hmm. situation, a disappearance versus, you know, just a death. It kind of informs everything about the experience, you know, subsequent to that.
And I'm not going to cry because I really do want to focus on the veggie taco I intend to have after this. But I do want to just say that, like, for any family who's gone through any kind of like significant, horrible trauma or grief. Oh, no, I am really crying. Like what my family has had to deal with my brother and other stuff. Like it just it's the show is not like a great show, but I found it triggering in ways that were like really connective. Whereas like, oh, this is like really sad to watch because I think of my own family and like that grief, the trauma doesn't go away. Like what Nicole's dealing with, I find like really connective because I've seen my parents go through that. And my brother didn't die, but in many ways our family did. And so it's just, it's complicated to watch. And there's a storytelling decision that Lulu made where my nose is now on fire. Storytelling decision made of like the way that the main character, although so honestly, many of these characters feel like main characters. It's giving main character energy, but like the main character is like talking about how people who've, you know, just through bad luck or by accident or just doing something, a split second decision, how that can change someone else's life or their life mm-hmm. forever. And that storytelling device, because one of it was like in something with a pool, it was just like game over for me. But like,
yeah, I thought about you in that.
Yeah, thank you. I thought about me too. It's like sometimes like that happens with anybody who's gone through any kind of trauma, like, or like crazy fucking, you know, situation. It's just the way that was connective and like talking about different people was very hard for me to watch, which is why I was glad I was able to watch it. I was glad it exists.
Yeah.
So it's not a great show. Like I literally was saying to my brother, I was like, you should watch it. And he was like, it's not good. I was like, I know. Like,
yeah,
he really only likes to watch great TV.
Yeah,
I think he has a much higher barometer than I do.
I would say actually, like as I'm watching further into both this season of True Detective and Expats, I find some similarities in the sense that I think there are a lot of interesting things happening, and I think there are some really great moments and some really cool visual things and whatever. But like, I don't know if like they're kind of going up to that level of like, oh wow, this is like knocked out of the park.
No,
but like
it's
you know, worth a look, I think.
Totally.
Also, it's like it's six episodes. What else?
Is it only six?
I believe so.
Fuck. Okay. But again, it's not a great show. But like But I think it's worth watching. And I also really appreciate, I don't know anybody's name. I barely know Nicole's. So the young actress who plays
Mercy,
she gave an interview. It's a great feature in the New York Times just about her kind of like exploding with this show and just like it's all, she's early days into this. I really love her on screen. I think she makes incredibly interesting choices. Everything she does feels real and natural and painful. And you can just feel like what she's experienced just with like her mom being like,
yeah,
you know, and a lot of cultural stuff impacting trauma that she experienced just in like feeling a sense of guilt about events that had not yet occurred based on what she discovered her family was saying about her. She's really given an interesting performance that makes me feel, you know, excited for this young actor and what she's going to do next. I think it could be really interesting. Also, what's his face is in it? Fucking, oh God.
Jack Huston.
Yeah.
When
he shows up, I'm like, oh my God, it's him again. Hollywood royalty. But he's great. He's a great performer.
Yeah.
I think he's more, I always think of him as like more famous than he might be, but maybe.
I think so. I think that he is like, he kind of has like that guy face a little bit, even though like, if you know who he is, you're like, oh, like that guy. But like, I don't know. It's good.
But I like him.
I'm into it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not going to change your life. I cried about it, so there's that. But it's a good show. I would love to unpack it with you more once it ends, because I think the Nicole Kidman in pain prestige television drama is just, that's a safe space for me. It really is. Like, I just like, she's just so fucking talented.
Yeah.
She really is. When she's just in like the vacancy in her eyes at points, I'm like, and you know what? Can I just say one more thing that might be like upsetting, but okay. I really do mean it, but it's a little upsetting. So safe space is what she has experienced as a parent with her children being taken away from her when she was labeled a suppressive person. And the fact that she has to be incredibly careful in press interviews because she adopted two kids with Tom Cruise, they got divorced, and then she was labeled a suppressive person by the Church of Scientology and was like, and the church instructed her kids never to contact their mom ever again. And I just think of, she's very careful in talking about it in media interviews because I don't think she wants to upset whatever very, very delicate balance is in place. And I don't know what her communication with them is like. I obviously don't know like a lot of the details here, but when it comes to like losing a child, I just think she's a phenomenal performer to begin with, but she's able to also tap into stuff from her real life.
I remember a few years ago, I felt really bad because when she was, maybe it was around like Big Little Lies time when she was like winning a bunch of awards, giving speeches, things like that. There were a couple of instances where she had like specifically thanked her husband Keith Urban and their two kids together, Sunday and Faith, and that people were sort of being like shady about like, why don't you thank the other two? And like, I think that there was not a lot of grace given for like how complex that situation is.
And I think she's in one of those positions genuinely where if she mentions them, I don't think that will work in her favor when it comes to being a parent. And I just think for anyone connected to any kind of like cult and just the process of disconnecting and losing family members and all of that, I mean, you can watch Leah Remini's excellent show with Mike Rinder for more, but it's just, and to have gone through that so publicly and to have Tom Cruise continue to be like lauded by people. And listen, I love a Tom Cruise movie, love, 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 but it's just a really,
yeah, it's like there's
a terrible situation that she's experienced.
There's more to that than people can
understand.
Know. Yeah.
Yeah. And she's just able to tap into an understanding of pain that just always to me feels really lived in and real. She really is. She's just with the nose, with whatever else, like, what's that fucking movie?
The Hours.
Yeah, I didn't.
By a nose, Nicole Kidman.
I hated that.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm like,
that was her moment.
That was her moment. You made it into a, I hate when, no, not for
Thanks,
me.
Thanks, Denzel.
Was it Denzel?
Yeah.
Oh, well, then maybe I'm not as mad because I love him. But he's doing a movie with Spike Lee. Is it a movie or a TV show?
I think it's a movie.
Can't wait.
Oh, my God, I hope it's a movie.
Oh, my God.
Does anybody still make movies?
Inside Man, I've seen hundreds,
I just
of
watched
times.
That for the first time last year. Clive Owen.
Can't even. But the woman with the boobs, we used to go to the same colorist. No, But like,
of course.
But you know, that's a character. It's like woman with boobs.
Yeah.
I'm not being
unnecessarily
boobalicious, but she also has great boobs. But we went to the same call, Kim something, Kim boobs. And we went to the same callers for a while. And I remember, I think I was like next to her at an appointment. I was like, how do I fucking know this lady? And then it occurred to me, and I hope that I said to her face how much.
Is she the one that's like yapping on the phone at the beginning in the bank?
No. Okay. That's the person who looks like her.
Okay.
And that's all we're going to say about that.
Yes,
if you haven't watched...
I'm bad at like... I've only seen it once.
That's okay. You know, I don't even know who I am. What's my name? How do I spell my middle name? Like, literally, like...
Donald Glover.
I am literally Donald Glover. You're talking. You must watch that movie. It's excellent. We have been talking for forever. And I'm so sorry that I bogarted your time. But watch Expats. Watch Mr. and Mrs. Smith. You're obviously watching Traitors if you're listening to this episode. Team Phaedra on Traitors.
Ooh. You gotta be a little more lovable.
That and her response of like, poverty was telling her, go fuck yourself. Yeah. With that, and
she's
I loved
Ice Princess.
Dylan's giving face right now, which you can't see, but I'm extremely into it. Dill, tell the people where they can follow you on social and listen to your podcast, all that and more.
Yeah, would love to. The like energy with which I bring to self-promotion at this point, I'm like, who cares? you can listen to my Bravo podcast, Mention It All, wherever you get your podcasts. We usually do 3 episodes a week. There's recaps, guests, interviews, things like that. Lots of fun. You can follow at Bravo by Betches for more Bravo content and follow me at Dylan Hafer.
Also, just looked at my Instagram, not while you were talking, but it popped up. And apparently there's a little bit of a little fight between Kristen Takeman, Dorinda, and Aaron about Aaron's use of cute when talking about Housewives Legacy, New York City Girls Trip Legacy Housewives, which is just another. I like when they mix and mingle.
Yeah.
That's going to be fun. Listen, follow me on Instagram at Dame Galley and join the Andy's Girls Patreon. Number one way to support the pod at patreon.com/Andy's Girls. Dill, thanks so much for joining me for this variety pack.
Of course. Thank you.
Team Phaedra. And we will chat with you soon. Bye-bye.
Ready for a career in behavioral health? Earn your online degree at Herzing University. Choose from health and human services, psychology, or social work programs. Gain the skills to work, coordinate, and manage nonprofits. Secure a bachelor's in psychology to study mental health or advance your social work career through our online Masters of Social Work. Let us help you become a social change agent. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Text HEALTH to 85109. That's HEALTH to 85109. Or visit herzing.edu.